Oral surgeon who directed a cop to extract four teeth on a sedated prisoner is given an absolute discharge. Syncrude fined in worker's death, and money will be spread across three agencies. The infrastructure gap between Indigenous and non-Indigenous communities in Canada is enormous. Canada is saying little about our embassy being damaged by an Israeli airstrike in Syria. Israel and the UN are arguing over how many aid trucks are being let into Gaza, and three dead and four missing after hydroelectric plant in Italy explodes and catches fire. Good morning. It's Wednesday, April 10th. I'm Nora. Here are your headlines. Let's start this morning in Gander, where oral surgeon Dr. Louis Bourchette has been given an absolute discharge. He was found guilty, but will serve no time, pay no money, or face no consequences. In 2020, Bourchette was brought into the Bishop's Falls Correctional Center. He was with two cops, Ron McDonald and Roy Goodyear. They brought him in to see an inmate who was at the center clinic. The inmate, who CBC switches between calling an inmate and a patient, was sedated. There, Bourchette guided McDonald through extracting four teeth from the inmate while the other cop, for some reason, filmed it. CBC, with no byline on this one, confoundingly refers to this oral surgeon directing a cop to extract someone's teeth as being, quote unquote, a procedure rather than a gross example of police brutality. The decision to find Bourchette guilty but to then have him face no penalty included, quote, several things to consider, unquote, writes the unnamed CBC journalist. One was the pandemic made the cops and the oral surgeon decide to have a cop torture an inmate by extracting his teeth. And another thing to consider was that Bourchette has had financial loss since it happened, and he's done, quote unquote, sensitivity training. CBC does not describe what kind of sensitivity training could possibly be recommended in a situation like this. Here's what the judge wrote, quote, the sentence must be proportionate to the gravity of the offense. A criminal conviction is not in the public's interest, unquote. Oh, really? Not to even dissuade any other cowboy oral surgeons from doing the same thing? This guy, by the way, has offices not just in Gander, but also in New Brunswick and Halifax. Very brutally, this article says nearly nothing about the guy who had his four teeth pulled by a cop while he was sedated. You'd think that a story about medieval torture would include something about the guy who was, you know, tortured. Next to Alberta, where earlier this week Syncrude was fined $390,000 after it pled guilty after the death of a worker. The worker drowned while operating an excavator that slid into water at the Aurora mine near Fort McKay. The report found that Syncrude didn't have a geotechnical engineer's approval for the ground under which the excavator was operating to guarantee that it was safe. That was something that Syncrude is responsible to make sure they have. Duncan McKinney at the Progress Report reports that as far as worker death fines go, $390,000 is high, as the average payout over the past 10 years has been just over $260,000. But what's notable about this story is that the fine is going to be going towards three institutions in the form of donations. The family is not receiving any restitution. The money will be divided between the David and Joan Lynch School of Engineering Safety and Risk Management, the University of Alberta Geotechnical Center, and the Alberta Municipal Health and Safety Association. Each are expected to put the money towards creating, quote, a best practice guide and field-ready mobile app, unquote, to help make trenching and excavation work more safe. Now, first of all, could you imagine being at the David and Joan Lynch School of Engineering Safety and Risk Management? Number one, writing that out all the time must totally suck, so sorry to everybody that works there. But second of all, being a student there and having a bursary in the name of this guy that died in a mine from Syncrude's donation to the school, I mean, it's so bizarre. The government should just be collecting fines and funding this stuff directly. But this is especially strange considering the fact that an app wouldn't have replaced the need to have an expert on site to clear the safety of the ground. Or is this just trying to find a way to allow Syncrude to avoid future responsibility if the responsibility is outsourced to an app? Suncor is the company that owns a controlling stake in Syncrude, and they made $282 billion in net revenue in fourth quarter 2023 alone. McKinney notes that there were three workers that died in two different incidents at Suncor sites 6 months earlier than this worker's death in 2021. Now to news from CBC's Brett Forrester. The Assembly of First Nations is ringing the alarm bell on how much money separates First Nations communities from non-First Nations communities when it comes to spending on infrastructure. The AFN estimates that the gap is $349.2 billion, just to give on-reserve communities, quote, access to similar infrastructure by 2030, unquote. Folks, you hear me talk a lot about billions, but this is an enormous sum of money. Think about just how bad civic infrastructure, roads, service centers, schools, health centers, parks, and business centers are for the gap to be as large as $349.2 billion. The biggest chunk of that gap is in housing, unsurprisingly, as on-reserve housing is in a disaster state and the clearest symbol for the government's ongoing genocide against Indigenous people. After housing spending is spending on infrastructure, all-season roads, and specific demands from communities that are lumped together. AFN, pointing out the necessary and obvious impact of the spending, reminds the government that this would create more than 3.2 million jobs and boost the GDP by more than $1 trillion, which, you know, could be the silver productivity bullet that Canada seeks. Adding $1 trillion to the GDP would be a significant boost to economic activity in this country. That is, if Canada weren't still a colonial nation and won't likely do much of anything to close that gap. For the Inuit Tapirit Kanatami, they estimate that the gap for Inuit communities is $75.1 billion. Next, did you hear that Canada's embassy has been damaged in an Israeli airstrike? It's not news that's been grabbing headlines in the way that, well, I imagine it should be. CBC's Evan Dyer is reporting that there is very little being said publicly about the strike, which, as Dyer writes, demolished the Iranian embassy that was next door to Canada's building. The blast that struck the Iranian complex was big enough to smash the windows and send shockwaves through the foundations of adjacent buildings, reports Dyer. Global Affairs Canada didn't answer the question, were they given a heads up before the attack? Did Israel see if Canada had any staff present before firing? The answer doesn't entirely matter, as Canada hasn't operated its Syrian embassy since 2012. The building is still property of Canada, and, quote, Canadian diplomats and other personnel, including RCMP officers, have entered Syria on several occasions since the embassy was closed. It's not clear whether they used the embassy as a base of operations, unquote. Why on earth would the RCMP be out at our closed Syrian embassy? The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said that 16 people were killed by the strike, including two civilian bystanders. There was apparently a meeting of senior Iranian military leaders at the embassy at the time of the attack. Dyer reports that the Brigadier General Mohammad Reza Zahedi, the only Iranian who's on the top leadership of Hezbollah, was the top official killed in the airstrike. Let's stick with Israel now for the next story. UNRWA is challenging rumors that U.S. aid into Gaza has increased significantly. Al Jazeera reports that UNRWA issued this comment yesterday in its daily situation report. Quote, there has been no significant change in the volume of humanitarian supplies entering Gaza or improved access to the north, unquote. Gaza needs at least 500 trucks daily to meet the need of humanitarian aid required to keep people alive. UNRWA said that 223 trucks entered Gaza on Monday, but Israel said that 419 trucks came in. On Tuesday, Israel said that 468 trucks came in. Some are crossing over land from Israel. UNRWA said that Israel is inflating these numbers because many of the trucks are half empty. And finally to Italy, where a hydroelectric power plant exploded at a dam on Lake Suviana near Bologna. The lake feeds the power plant at the town of Bargi. The explosion has killed three people and four others are missing. It happened while workers were doing maintenance and triggered a collapse of part of the underground structure, which is nine stories deep. A fire, then flooding, happened at 60 meters below the surface, reports Al Jazeera. The plant is owned by Enel, Italy's former national energy company, which is now a private corporation that operates in more than 30 countries. Those are your headlines for Wednesday, April 10th. I'm Nora. You're listening to this podcast at sandynora.com, on the Real News Network podcast feed, and anywhere you get your podcasts. Have a wonderful Wednesday. I'll talk to you tomorrow.